What's up, everybody? Armand here, back with another episode. Today's guest, we have Lauren Petrullo, who is the founder of Mongoose Media, as well as the founder of Asian Beauty Essentials and a couple more companies. Now, this episode was really sick. I like Lauren a lot. She's a very energetic, very charismatic guest, and she knows her shit. She really knows marketing, and she knows how to have a good time. We talk about her secret to good times, actually, which is also known as the dollar to fun ratio. We also talk about the various companies that she's worked on, and she gives some pretty great marketing tips if you're looking to know when to start diving into Facebook ads and to know if your product is ready for market. We talk about that too. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did, and thank you for listening to the Play Hard podcast.
I moved here because I worked with Disney in marketing and business development at the Walt Disney Company. And the picture in the background is Honey Lemon from Big Hero 6, because I look like a life-size version of a tall, skinny blonde with pink glasses. No? Hold on.
No.
Okay, well, at some point today, you need to look up who Honey Lemon is as a Disney character, and then you'll just be like, oh my gosh, it's Lauren if she got highlights.
Yeah, I'm going to check. All right.
And like, normally I'm in like really tall heels, so she's like 6'5" in that film. So.
How big's the big hero?
Let's assume 9
whatever
feet.
His name is.
Baymax. No, I think she's like 5'11", because it's set in San Francisco, and the main character is half Japanese, and stereotypically, that population isn't as tall as other nationalities, but he is half white too, so depends.
But yeah.
I am a monster in heels. Like, people think I'm 6'2".
You've inspired a new Disney movie to watch, because that's one of them that I just realized I haven't seen a lot of the classics. Like, I'm really starting to get back into it. I feel like I stuck with my favorites and didn't really branch out. So to me, the number one is Lion King.
Okay.
That just tops all. And then if you're throwing Pixar in the mix, I really like Toy Story. Soul of the new Pixar ones, I'm a big fan of Soul.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought that one was really good. A musician, so I could really relate
Fair.
To that.
I was told that I'm like pizza person. The one who
pizza
like
person?
the ghost in Soul or whatever that kept wanting to eat pizza.
Oh yeah.
They were like, I look like Honey Lemon and I act like that character. I was like, well, I mean, I am motivated by food, so.
Was it the guy with the Australian accent?
Maybe. You know, I've only watched that film once, and now you've inspired me to watch that one again because it was good. It had, like, George Gershwin kind of vibes.
Yeah, I guess, so we can get into your background, because I really do want to ask about what's it like working for a company like Disney, but you're no longer there. You are the founder of Mongoose Media, Asian Beauty Essentials, and is there anything else in the mix? I'm forgetting.
It's a bunch of stuff you can stick to. It's obnoxious. Like,
yeah.
Just be like, ugh. I'm a mom to a dog who was
Mongoose
famous
Media.
On Twitter, but like,
really?
Yeah, yeah.
What did the dog do?
There's a show called The Puppy Bowl. Are you familiar with it?
Not at all.
Okay, so there's Super Bowl Sunday for people who like commercials and people who like football, and then for those that don't like football but are here for the barbecue or like the tailgating, there's the Puppy Bowl, which happens 2 hours before the Super Bowl game, and so it's a big football game with rescue dogs. And it's incredibly, like, amazing cuteness overload. My dog was captain of Team Fluff and got a yellow card for excessive cuteness. And during that Super Bowl, that Puppy Bowl...
Wait, a yellow card in a football-related game?
Yes. Or maybe it was like a flag on the field. I feel like he had a yellow card. I mean, well, let me just make sure I close the light. So he got this excessive cuteness penalty, and his name on the show was Alexander Hamilpup, and this was at the height of Hamilton. And so the entire cast had tweeted to my dog. People wrote like songs about him. People did a lot of fan art. We got stuff sent to our house. It was fan art.
How do you get your dog on the Puppy Bowl? Like, did you have to submit into some contest or?
Good question. The way I normally answer that when people ask about like these incredulous experience that they can't believe I've had, and like it's one after another, I'm just like, hi, my name is Lauren Petrullo. Have you met me? But in this regard, we actually had adopted him after they filmed. So they had filmed in November, aired in February. He was ours in January. So we like, when we adopted him, we had to commit to the little dog rescue that we would make media appearances. Cause like he had his own like sports card. So like we did autographs. We took him to a bunch of news channels. There's like commercial things. Cause it was all in support of rescue dogs. So we had to like sign this agreement. Like, okay, yes, we are adopting a potentially famous dog. And then when Lin-Manuel Miranda himself had tweeted to the dog, like it was chaos. I've never
You're
seen
rescuing
my
rescuing him from the dangers of fame.
Well, he was one of 25 dogs from that rescue that had been saved from a puppy mill and had been living inside a storage unit, suspended from the ceiling, never having touched the ground. Yeah.
That doesn't sound like a happy life for a pup.
Yeah, but now he's a prince. I mean, he was like, we're going to the dog park.
And a celebrity prince at that.
Yeah. For the first 2 years after the show came out, it would be really funny going to the dog park because people I didn't know, oh my gosh, it's your dog. It's yours, right? Because he's a Pomskie. So he's part Pomeranian, part Husky, and is a very unique, small little Husky look. Plus, I mean, he's beautiful, just like his mother. But yeah. That's me. So you could say just Mongoose Media and Asian Beauty Essentials. That's totally fine.
Okay, sweet. So how exactly did you get started in the entrepreneurship world? So I see you have a history of doing marketing. You were working at Disney way back even as an intern, and then you worked at the Walt Disney Company. What was kind of the lead up to that journey for you?
Well, we could do the long version or the short version. In a few words, I was fired.
It's a podcast. We can.
Yeah. Well, I was fired from the previous job that I had. But in the longer version, because it is a podcast. When I was younger, I grew up in a household where it was never.
Yeah. The how you got fired is the fun part.
Oh, well, I mean, if anyone ends up hearing this that I used to work with, forgive me, but I remember like, being told, like, they're like, hey, you know, we're going in a different direction. Like, understood. Got it. I was fine. You know, it was very obvious with conversations I'd previously been having that we had a very misaligned understanding of what the role is and what I was comfortable doing in that role.
Yeah.
And during the sit down, I remember this gentleman telling me, that was the nicest firing I've ever done. Like, thank you for handling that so professionally. I thought, well, what's the alternative? Like, do you want me to throw a fit? And someone who was let go, like, she broke stuff on her way out, was screaming. And I was like, whoa, that's
intense.
Yeah. So anyways, so I was like, okay, no, totally understand. Thank you for telling me. You know, I wish you the best of luck. All right, let me go pack up my things. Is there anything I can help you finish off today to make sure that like you guys are set up in the next position? I'll make myself available if there's any transition needed. I thought that was normal. I'd never been fired before.
Yeah.
And so
that is a really nice firing. I don't know if I would have taken it that maturely. I'd be upset.
Well,
I wouldn't go as far as breaking things, you know, but
it was
maybe
intense.
Maybe not. I wouldn't be like, yeah, let me continue working for a little.
I mean, yeah, it was like, you know, 4 o'clock. Sometimes I'd stay till 7. And they're really good humans. I respected them a lot as individuals. I knew the direction that they were going with some of the initiatives they were taking on was not something I felt comfortable with. So again, it wasn't like this is out of nowhere. It was okay, you made the decision. Awesome. And
yeah,
I remember like packing up my office and one of the owners looking at me incredulously a little. And it seemed, forgive me if they hear this. Oh gosh. It seemed like they expected a bigger reaction, or they expected like a deeper like commitment to who they were. I mean, I love them as humans. So I have this skill where I can cry on command. And so I was holding this stuff out, and then I was like, I let them go, but I was sad so that they could feel at ease with themselves. I don't know. But yeah, that's the story. I had a very polite departure, I guess, amicable. And
so you fake cried so they would feel like, oh, this is normal. Okay.
Or that, yeah, like maybe that they'd feel like, okay, she's going to miss this job. She's going to miss these people. Like, oh, I felt so manipulative. Yeah. But I was like, if that's what you need, I'm happy to give that for you. And then I was like on the phone with my husband, and they're like, okay, cool. What do you want to get for dinner?
It was just back to normal.
And then, well, the next day I went out with some friends, and then a friend of mine was like, cool, you should do this on your own. And then I got home that night and had two people text me, hey, I heard you're no longer with this company. Does that mean you're taking clients? So it was kind of just like, yes, I don't want to do a resume. So I didn't.
Yeah. So was this like a consulting gig that you were doing and you were already working with clients? So it was as easy as like starting your own practice, or
I was at a marketing agency. Type
of marketing role?
I was in a marketing agency, and we were doing a lot with Facebook ads, and I had familiarity with how we do like offer architecture. And, you know, I worked with like major, major brands, like some of the largest hotel and hospitality brands you can think of. And so I had, you know, some really significant case studies on my belt, and then some people that had heard of our work or had been friends of clients that the agency had worked with but couldn't afford agency pricing were like, yes, I'm going to get some of the mind behind the agency at a price I should have charged them more for. That's
now you do.
Happy to. But it's not just me anymore. Like, there's a big team. There's business insurance. There are like contracts involved. There's a lot more involved to it. But when I definitely first started, I was like, oh, I can do this for 1/10 of what they're charging. I don't need all that. And then I quickly learned, oh, there's overhead. And there's a lot more that goes into it. That's good. We evolve. And I went from like this like freelancing contractor type of role, entrepreneur. Like I had the chance to work on all of Toyota and Mitsubishi Canada. I did all of their Facebook ads. I had some amazing, amazing entrepreneurs, really big names in the space, like ones for sure. Anyone that's listening has definitely seen on social media. So I got to help contribute to a lot of their Facebook ads. And then, you know, got to the point where some of my clients were saying, hey, do you also do Google ads? Hey, do you also do email? And I had friends that I kept referring the work to, and then just built them under my umbrella. I said, one single billing, one single point of contact, lots of results.
So to someone who's never done Facebook ads, and this is something they want to start doing to promote, let's say, e-commerce, because I know you have a lot of e-commerce stuff. This is an area of expertise for you. What advice would you give them if they were just starting it?
Don't. And Facebook ads, that's the wrong thing to say. I think Facebook ads and just PPC in general, pay-per-click advertising, should be the last thing a brand does. You want to have a proven offer before you start spending money and giving it to Zuckerberg. We audit accounts, like we audit hundreds of accounts every year, and a lot of brands will launch offers that aren't ready, and they'll put money behind a product that hasn't been proven as a market fit. So, you know, it's not the nice thing to say, but unless you're ready to spend $100 a day, you're really going to be in a, like, in the trenches of Facebook ads, where you're like $3,000 a month, $100 a day is a really small budget who you're competing against. However, let's say you're like, no, I really want to do this. I'm super into it. Time of this podcast, right? Like summer 2023. What we're seeing right now is Advantage Shopping Plus campaign. So ASC Plus is how it's acronymized. Is that a word? It's how it's shortened.
It is now.
It is now. Installing those campaigns would be where I'd start. So it leverages your catalog. And so it will pull your product feed. And why I'm saying this campaign to start. Now, generally, we recommend starting minimum $50 a day because success scalable. Like auditing an account yesterday for one of the campaigns we've launched like 3 weeks ago has a 12 return on ad spend for this one campaign. So it's every dollar they're spending, they're making $12.34 back in sales. Huge. The reason why ASC plus campaigns are so effective is there is this update with iOS, with Apple, where they said, we're not sharing any of our data with you anymore, Facebook. You're going to be driving blind. This was a huge, like, dismantling of marketing.
Yeah, for I had a previous guest tell me that was like the 08 housing crash for marketing.
Yeah, oh, that's such a good way to describe it. Yeah, exactly. So this reliance on first-party data has become the most important thing. And in fact, like, there's rumors that, you know, the Facebook Pixel, Meta Pixel, which sends conversion data, sends website behavior traffic back into the Facebook Ads Manager, is going to be slowly fading out anyways. So this whole idea of first-party data wins will stay true since iOS was always true, but will become more and more prevalent later. So why ASC plus campaigns are effective is the entire algorithm for that type of campaign was rewritten after iOS. Every other campaign objective, everything else is reliant upon a 2015 engine that's evolved over time versus starting totally from scratch. So we are finding these Advantage Shopping Plus campaigns where you're leveraging your catalog, you're able to get to those middle and bottom of funnel folks in a more cost-effective way. But again, like, it's hard where really you want to start with at least $50 a day and you want to make sure you have a 14-day runway because there's a 7-day attribution window and all sides of those things. When you ask me for someone who's just starting, a lot of times it's like, I will spend up to $20 a day and I want all of these answers. And I'm like, when you're comfortable 50, start with ASC campaigns. And then also, like, a really cool hack is if you have already generated some traffic, even if it's your friends to the website, the first audience I would create is what we call 1.5. Sorry, I'm getting like really into specific nomenclature. Like, if anyone has questions, like, I'm so sorry. I'll answer all of them if you like send us an email or DM or something. But we have 5 different levels of targeting that we do. And so level 1 is cold. Level 2 is warm, but like warm at like, as a Floridian, I mean, I live in Florida now. It's still cold for me. Like, I need the thermometer to be at like 80 degrees to be comfortable. So when I say warm, I mean, it's warm for North folks. But that's anyone who's engaged with your Facebook page, your Instagram page, they've visited your website, maybe they've watched some videos, they're aware of you in some capacity. Maybe they don't know you, trust you, remember you, but they've had some sort of engagement. What I'll do is a 1.5 audience for a brand new, like, low budget, just starting to try, where I'll retarget the biggest audiences I can. So people that have interacted with our on-property stuff in a year, people who have visited the website in 6 months. And then I'll expand that reach to reach new target customers. So we call that level 1.5 because 1 is cold, 2 is like room temp warm. And I found that to be that a really sense. Good way to test your product offer against to see if it has a product market fit if you're really just starting.
Yeah. And that begs the question. So how would you define a ready offer?
Good. That's a great question. Actually, like, I don't think people really ask that, and they should start asking that more often. Okay, so for me,
for background, I'm a product manager, so this is why that's what I think about.
You're just like, for background, I'm brilliant. Look at all these books I've read or pretend to look like I've read.
A little bit of both. It's 1.5.
That's funny. So, what makes a good offer is, have you been able to sell it to strangers more than 3 times? Have you had people show interest in your product that aren't your friends, aren't your parents, and have told you they like the product? Another like baseline is, you have at least 10 reviews for your product. You want to have double digits. So people getting reviews is so hard. Like, it's easier to like get someone's first child than to get a review, even if it's like,
no, that's true.
You gave birth to me. Please, please. Oh, I'll get around to it. So when you have a product that has 10 reviews, you're in a good place.
So way back, like 2 years ago, I was starting a company with a friend that was a Yelp, but for cybersecurity consulting. Mm-hmm. And our whole premise was to get reviews. And holy shit, it is so difficult to get people to take 5 seconds to leave a review. So yeah, I get it.
Well, if you're listening to this podcast, you should absolutely leave a review because you understand the struggles of how hard it is to get reviews.
That's right.
And how much they're appreciated.
Review Mongoose Media and the Play Hard Podcast as many stars as you can. And tell us why. Tell us why we're awesome, because we love hearing it.
And if you say, because I look like a real life honey lemon, I will send you all of the chocolates. Like, just please inflate my ego.
What about the skincare stuff? I saw the Asian Beauty Essentials. I think that's pretty cool. What got you into the skincare company?
So during the pandemic, there was talks all about like, oh, wash your hands. The best way to help prevent the spread of the disease. And we had been in Italy. My husband and I were in Italy for a few months when it started.
Oh, that was like one of the worst countries, huh?
The hospital was shut down.
They were locked down.
Not even in the beginning. It was like we were there last year and we couldn't go anywhere. You couldn't be outside without a mask on. You couldn't go anywhere without showing COVID vaccination and your green pass. Like it was way different. So like January, we were there and left in February. Like hospitals were shut down. There's not one person we know in Italy that doesn't know a very close person that was gone, that like died from during the pandemic.
Wow.
And so we left thinking that we wouldn't be able to get into the country. And we saw how bad it was. We arrived and like the US didn't even take our temperature. And I'm certain I had it in February. Like I had every symptom, like for sure. What it was
February 21 or 22?
21.
Okay.
And so at the very beginning, because it was March when it like hit the United States. So that's where like, they're not going to let us in. Like I had come back, like we'd come back February, like early February, terrified. And then like, oh, this isn't a thing here. Like we were under.
No, I remember. I graduated college December 19. And I remember hearing kind of like on Reddit, there's this virus going on. And I was like, oh, that sucks for China. And then like 3 months later, my job just like, yeah, you guys are going home for 2 weeks and never return to the office.
Wow. I mean, yeah. Well, yeah, it was China, Korea, and Italy. I need to be refreshing the numbers. And then I was like, guys, this is serious. But the only thing that was being talked about to help prevent it was obviously like social distancing, but washing your hands. And I've been really fortunate to have traveled, to have met people from around the world, and to know firsthand that not everywhere has access to clean water. And I was like, well, that's not going to work. How are you supposed to clean your hands if you don't have clean water? Are we just like condemning them?
Yeah.
And, you know, with Mongoose Media, we were able to help create some very successful, scalable brands, transfer from 6 to 7, 7 to 8 figures a year in sales from work that we've been doing. I was like, oh, I could do this. I could launch an e-commerce brand and we can use it to like raise funds for clean water initiatives. I've proven myself time and time again for our clients. I could do this. So I did. And then I learned really quickly that there's so much more to owning and operating an e-commerce brand than just the marketing.
Yeah. I had a similar thing. I was first launching a solution at my company. Like my background was in marketing. I was doing cold calling, then also helping with the marketing department.
Sorry.
And then I was doing, it sucked. I was doing a launch and I realized like as we were launching the product, someone came up to me in operations. They were like, so let's say we get a customer, like how are we going to implement this? And it was at that moment, I was like, we're not just marketing the launch. Like we got to do some stuff. And that alone taught me so much on my job. Now it's like the first thing I consider is like, I won't even touch any kind of like outbound, like outreach or like any kind of marketing or campaign until I'm like positive we have like the foundations and everything laid out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've gotten better at that as well, because when you talk about like, what's a good offer, like we'll have brands that are like, hey, we've just launched, like that's amazing, like don't come to us for Facebook ads yet, like no, do pop-ups, show me that, like can you get a comma in your sales, like just generally, like make sure you've had a comma in your sales, because then I know that you've been able to sell it beyond your mother. right? Unless your products are like
monthly, comma, or are you talking like
in revenue?
Okay.
Right. So it's like
per month or total?
Total. I'm like, you haven't had like your first $1,000 in sales yet. Like you have so much more to learn. And then when you've gotten to the point of like, hey, you're making $10,000 a month, that's when you can start looking at bringing on or adopting like agency style services. But there's just this like hustle and like market fit you need to do. And it's not that we can't help. It's just that we don't want to put anyone in a Hail Mary position. Like we have been.
Yeah, it feels like a good rule of thumb. Like, I imagine it is a bit of a waste of money if you're spending to compete with these ads or competing for people's attention, which is already incredibly hard to do. And if you don't have the right thing to not only capture, but hold and then get them to want to buy, you're kind of just throwing money into the internet for no reason.
Zuckerberg appreciates it, for sure.
Yeah, he says it's paying for his training for that cage fight.
There's so many things that you could do first. Like Asian Beauty Essentials, like, ended up becoming, we have a few other brands that like I own that we use as in our advertising hospital as like our residency program. So we don't launch anything that we haven't proven within our own ecosystems first.
Yeah.
And so I was like, all right, doing exactly what I've told my clients. We're not spending any money on ads. And so like we went really hard and like some of these things that any brand could do, right? Like blog writing, we've been using AI for like 3 years. And then it became big with ChatGPT. And I was like, yeah, I know. We've been doing it. This website gets over 100,000 visitors a month because we've been doing this so well for like the last year and a half. But like we started with everything that wasn't PPC to like test things out. And I really enjoyed it. And especially because I'm like, hey, I'm like eating what I'm saying. Or is it, what's the expression? Like eat the dog food. I'm eating my own dog food.
Yeah. Eat your own dog food.
Yeah. So.
Celebrity dog food. Good.
Yeah. Alexander Hamilpup's dog food.
All right. Well, yeah, thanks for that. That's a really helpful lesson. My next, just to kind of change gears and go into a little bit of health, but I just want to go into the topic of health in general and like, what is your relationship with your health? How do you view that? And how do you go about staying healthy while, you know, being very busy with all your companies?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's such an under-discussed topic. And I do want to give the disclaimer that like, genetics totally play a lot of it, like into like physical health, but then emotional health. Like I have surrounded myself by really good humans, and that hasn't always been the case. So like for me, the first thing that comes to mind is like emotional and love health, and how important those are to me. Cause like I am married. I have a significant other that has supported me with everything, right? Like right before I started working for Disney Institute, where we were this like business consulting arm of the Walt Disney Company, I had a full ride to Texas Tech to get my law degree and finance master's as a joint degree. Everything was paid for. And 50 days before classes started, I got the acceptance for this job. And my husband was like, okay, I've got shotgun. So in terms of like the emotional and like love health of like where I'm feeling about myself and those around me, I find it really important to prioritize that. Like I'm not motivated by money. I'm motivated to make sure that I have at least one meal with my husband every day, assuming we're in the same place, because I do travel a bit for work.
Yeah.
And then like other things to help me make sure that like love bucket of health is full. Like I do a lot of activities beyond just work. So like I fence, I go to Zumba. I'm not very good at it, but I still do it. Like we're taking salsa classes now. Like I'm on a dragon boating team. I have improv classes starting next week. Like I try to do all these different activities. I call it like my tour de hobbies. Like I've been learning Chinese. I've taken Korean classes. Like, hey, I'll try anything so that I could put myself in new situations so that I can have a fresh perspective and new understanding of different folks from different areas who have different interests. And like from my time at Disney, having that diversity of people around you, the diversity of thought, the diversity of cultures, activities, and exposure has been for me the greatest deposit that I can make into my health, because it hits like the emotional, the intellectual, and the love health metrics that matter. And then having activities like dragon boating or fencing that requires a little sweating, like even like, gosh, it's embarrassing, but it's scary. When in my like morning routine, I'll do like 15 minutes of dancing. Like I'll follow a very specific genre of music videos and they're mirror dancing. And it's not embarrassing, but if you saw how I dance.
Oh, gosh. What is it?
Do you want to guess?
K-pop.
It is K-pop. I don't listen to K-pop music, but I do these conventions and these pop-ups. So like I'll play K-pop soundtracks. But if you ever watch a K-pop music video, their dancing is like so next level. Like Shakira is my favorite. So yeah, I'll get a little closer.
I don't listen to K-pop frequently, except what was the big band?
BTS.
Like global stars. Yeah, BTS. Mm-hmm. Their music videos were nuts. Like there'd be like 12 of them all in sync doing the same moves. Yeah. Like so sick.
There's so much energy.
Yeah.
So I try to glisten for at least 15 minutes a day. And if that means like, you know, doing like a K-pop dance routine or like I have the Meta Quest. And so I'll like do Beat Saber. I'm really high ranked for Lizzo, full disclosure. That glisten for me is like my star power. And then that like diversity of activities, it forces me to meet.
Glisten, you mean like sweat? Like just a little layer of sweat?
I glisten. That's not how you describe it when you're like smelly and like dripping sweat every.
No, I call it sweating.
Okay. Well, tomato glistening tomorrow. Yeah, it's something like I'm really grateful. Like I get to meet all these like folks from like very different areas and then we get to have like deeper conversations. And it's almost like I get to reinvent myself a little bit because like I joined these like communities of folks that are like super into whatever this activity is. And I come in knowing nothing. Like you should have seen me day one of that Korean class. I was like, I don't know any K-pop. I don't know any K-dramas. Like, I don't know anything that's going on. Now, like, okay, let's go. I have a much stronger foundation because I've gotten to meet these people and hear what they're passionate about. And I think, again, like going to like the health side is when you can hear what someone's passionate about, you get to unlock this level of them where like their soul shines and that like it just reverberates into you. It's like a recharge. But I'm also an extrovert, so.
Yeah. You bring up a really good point about, number one, other people's passions. I mean, that's a large part of why I started this podcast in the first place. I mean, the first side is the health, but then the other, it's like, to me, it's their habits and hobbies that I'm really interested in. Like, I like hearing successful people's morning routines, but I also like hearing, what do you do when you're having fun? Like, what do you like to just let go. I think that's pretty awesome. I'm definitely in a stage where I'm looking for more activities. I'm about to have like a lot of travel and just digital nomad going on.
Yes.
So it's like the activities I find aren't going to be as like locked in to one place,
sure.
You know? But at the same time, there's a ton of stuff I want to give a try. I can't say K-pop dancing is one of them. But I do like dancing. I might get into either hip hop or salsa, something like that would be cool.
Yeah. They just don't have as many mirrored, like the videos aren't as robust and abundant to find the ones to dance to because they're slower. Like, I just like, I want to play it. I don't care if I make mistakes. The only people that can see me is someone who happens to be awake at 4 a.m. walking behind my house. But if you are doing that, like,
and then if they are, they'll probably think they're in a dream and just keep walking.
Oh, like for me, that's the whole like every like, you know, if someone sees it, good for them. Congratulations. They won. Like.
Yeah.
It's funny. But if you are doing
you just made their
travel,
day.
Can I give you some recommendations of like fun activities?
Yeah, sure.
So one, whenever I go to a new place, like professional side, I'll always go to like Airbnb experiences and then I'll hire a photographer in that area. And so you can get like a full day photo, like 4 hours. So like maybe 30 to 50 photos for often like $30. And I'll like bring a bag and change outfits. But I'll meet with a local to do photos in that area. Two, I'll look at other Airbnb experiences because, like, in Italy, you can get a private cooking lesson from a grandma, an Italian grandmother. In, like, Budapest, you can go get, like, a plague tour, like a walking plague tour. It's, like, stuff you would never think about doing, and it's all hosted by locals. And then, again, being the extrovert itself, I'm like, okay, cool. Where do you go? And then the third recommendation is, like, look up the free walking tours. And, like, the paid ones tend to be more organized. But if you do a free walking tour,
yeah,
they're college kids who, like, have this joie de vivre in their life. Like, they haven't succumbed to taxes and insurance.
Yeah,
loans.
They still, yeah, I know what you mean.
And they're so giving with the information. It's like, okay, like, where do you recommend? It's like, oh, yeah, I want to help you. Like, thank you for asking about my culture.
Yeah.
So I would do those three.
That is awesome. I mean, you just, without knowing, you've helped me with a lot. I've been looking to swag out the gram a little bit more. I never post. So these photos for $30, oh, 4 hours, this sounds like a steal to me.
And like they have tours, so they take you to specific spots. And so
yeah, that's so
bring
cool.
Four shirts.
Probably very aesthetic stuff too.
Absolutely.
And another thing is, could also be doing this in my town. Like, I live in San Diego. I imagine there's a lot of cool stuff to do. I've been living here my whole life, but I never really do touristy stuff or like fun stuff. But I'm sure there's like tons of experience to have.
You could try dragon boating. Here. I dragon boated with a team in San Diego.
What is dragon?
Okay, it's competitive canoeing, but Chinese is how I describe it. Now, I'm on.
Oh, I see. I'm looking at
a Chinese team in Florida. I'm not Chinese at all. But they saw my wingspan.
I would have never guessed.
And let me in. But yeah, there's a dragon boating team in San Diego, and that community is fantastic. I mean, I couldn't love on them more. They had like two boats. They go in the bay, and they let me go when I went for a traffic and conversions conference in San Diego. I said, hey, I'm here. Can I practice?
Yeah.
They said, welcome.
What do you love about dragon boating?
So I played soccer in college, and it was a contact sport. So this was my first non-contact sport that I had ever explored. I like how much of an advantage I have by being so long-limbed. And then again, like, yeah. I'm like 8 inches taller than my female teammates. So I get the ego boost of like already being able to reach longer. But it requires the synchronicity that's really calming. But if you had to like summarize it down to like one thing, I'm on a boat and I don't have my phone. So it's an activity, like same with fencing. Like I know that like I have a saber in my hand, but like you could be playing soccer and you can have it in your phone if like the ball's on like the other side of the field and you're not anywhere near it. But I'm on a boat. No one has their phones really. They're all like left at the shed and you're just on the water and it requires every bit of muscle you have. Like I pulled my butt.
Yeah. And you're like vibing with all these people without even having to say a word to them. You're all after the same thing. You're all doing the same motion at the same time. I'm sure that's a very unique experience. Yeah.
You want to talk about unique? So during a race, I'm in Florida. There's a town called The Villages. For those that don't know, The Villages is a population of 55 plus adults at a size over 100,000. It's the retirement community of Florida. Everyone comes to Florida to retire, but
I've heard of that.
Oh,
yeah.
And the like STD capital rumors. Like it's a lifestyle.
That's what I heard about.
Yeah. So
that they are pimping out there.
I mean, I want to live my best retired life. I agree and support all of their best desires. You know, it's all consent. They're retired. So there are a lot of dragon boating teams from The Villages. And there's this one team where like their average age is 68. Okay. 68 years old. That's more than double what I am. And they'll walk onto the boat like almost with like a walker, like very unstable.
Yeah.
And they're like,
shuffling.
Don't beat us too hard, you youngins. I'm like, okay, I understand. Then I get smoked. Like, it's not even like it's like Lewis Hamilton racing a toddler on a bicycle. These are like ex-Marine, very dedicated paddlers. And you want to talk about unique experience? Like I have never been so demolished in any sport as I have by the retirement community in drag.
That's the tagline right there. That's the intro for the show.
Hey.
That's fun. It also feels as though you're very connected to Asian communities. I mean, you have the Asian Beauty Essentials. You're learning three different Asian languages. Is there a background behind that?
Well, in 2019, what would it take? Netflix had recommended this Chinese show. And I was like, what? I've never watched an Asian drama at all. But okay, Netflix, I trust you. 6 episodes later, I was like, oh my gosh, I speak French and Italian and know sign language really well. I don't know anything about Chinese. Let me check. And sure enough, like a mile from my house were Chinese classes on Saturdays starting 2 weeks from that day for $5 an hour. I said, all right, let's go. I loved it. Made really great friends with my classmates. And then I found a Facebook ad where they said there were Korean language lessons for $1 an hour. And I was like, I don't know anything about Korea. Like, I knew nothing.
There's Zuck working his algorithm.
Yeah.
He saw you at the other classes.
100%.
He said, she knows 3. Let's put 4 on her plate.
So, like, my Saturdays, like, I got recruited to do dragon boating from the Chinese language school. Because, like, literally, like, they walked in. I'm in, like, 4-inch heels. So I look like I'm 6'2". And they my coach held up my arms like Michael Jordan wingspan wise and said, do you want to join us in dragon boating? And I said, I don't know what that is, but yes, tell me when and where to go. And then I did that for a while. Like my Saturdays for 2 years was dragon boating for an hour and a half on the water, Korean classes for 3 hours, then Chinese classes for 3 hours. And then my Italian husband would be like, great, I get Formula One and the TV all to myself. And then because I was there, like part of that, like pandemic, like the Korean classes had slowed down and I thought I could at least sell the products to my classmates. And I saw how much the K wave was impacting those around me. And so I saw that as an opportunity. Yeah. And then because of that, it leaned more into that. And my dragon boating team is a really diverse team, like folks from all across Asia. And there's like some non-Asians, of course. But I became like their diversity person, right? Like, you know, some college posters will have like one black student or 2 black students in the poster. Yeah. And they're like,
you're like the one white girl in their dragon boating
team. I am. So
how does it feel being the minority for a change?
I grew up in the city of Chicago. So every school I attended, I was always in the minority. But being in like a homogenous type of minority, I experienced it when I went to Ghana for my birthday and then when I went to Taiwan. And I was like, oh, I love this. I'm given a lot more privilege in a lot of ways. But like in these homogenous communities, there's sometimes like the assumption that I look like Taylor Swift just because I'm tall and blonde. And I'm like, yes, give me more compliments like this. Like I will take all of it. But it's also been a welcoming experience because so many of the communities, like even like in the Asian community in Florida, has been marginalized or has faced terrible, terrible treatment, especially during the pandemic, that I got to hear conversations that I don't think a lot of people have had the chance to hear.
Yeah.
Well, you could try go to the dragon boating community, though, full disclosure for anyone that's like, okay, I really want to know what this is. Like if you end up like, my team is charged dragon boat. If you go to their Instagram or TikTok, you will like basically see a lot of us paddling and any of the videos that sound like Steffi Graf is playing tennis. It means I'm on the boat. Like it is uncomfortable noises when I'm like putting all of my energy into paddle. But at large in the US, the population for dragon boaters are 70% women and it's a lot of breast cancer survivors because you work the muscles that like are really impacted because of breast cancer or breast reduction or like breast removals. It's like, how many times can I say that word on your podcast in a row?
One more.
Yeah. It's the breast. I mean, the best. I love dragon boating.
Is that because it strengthens the muscle or?
What I've been told is like you work these muscles that often get ignored and it helps break down any scar tissue. It helps alleviate any pain, and it's a therapeutic way to address, like it ends up like hurting individuals even further. I'm very breast cancer illiterate, but the community is so strong.
You're telling me. No, that, yeah, that makes sense. Again, illiterate, I don't know, but oh, you mentioned your morning routine. What, you want to go over what you do?
Yeah, so
4 a.m. dancing, that's one thing we
no,
got.
first we have to realize my dog is my alarm clock. He wakes me up every morning with like little kisses on my nose to make sure I know that he needs to be walked eventually. But it's like the sweetest alarm. But yeah, so like 4 a.m., I'll usually check my phone for about 10, 15 minutes. We do have a diverse team. So I'll just see if there's anything that's like emergency. Then I'll jump down and I'll do my like K-pop mirrored dancing, where essentially I look like the balloon person in front of a used car dealership. Then I'll listen to a book or read a book for 15 minutes. I'll make myself a smoothie or like a matcha. Like I'll have some sort of drink to like kickstart like my energy. Like, hey, you're turning on right now. Like there's food in your system. And then I'll try to clean for 15 minutes. So it's like an hour. So I try to put 15-minute blocks. And then typically I will leave myself like 0 to 5 minutes to shower and get ready for the day. I'll walk the dog for 30 minutes. So I live downtown Orlando. We have really great parks near my neighborhood. And during that time, I'll do Duolingo. And by the time I come home, ideally I've been up for 2 hours and I've had less than 20 minutes of work focus. And all of this is just like alluring. What do you want to do? What brings you joy? And
Kind of like energizing yourself for the
yeah,
work.
I don't like, and I had succumbed to this a lot where I wake up, I'm working. I go to bed, I'm working. I'm like, who I am and what I work is not what defines me. And I will prioritize health, and happiness over money every time.
Yeah, I feel that. I also did want to go into the matcha company that you worked with, because I'm actually, so my experience with Asian culture is I love Gong Fu style tea and like all things Chinese tea. That's like my favorite every day. I'm not even joking. This morning,
No.
every morning, yeah, I make Gong Fu style tea. Aged white tea is my favorite. This morning I had a blend. It was like, do you know the company White 2 Tea?
No, but I'm about to look it up.
They're a pretty sweet dealer. They have these really interesting blends. So I had this like white tea, black tea blend, and the white tea was like a 2017, really interesting, that it came in a cake too. I'd never seen like black tea come in a cake, but delicious nonetheless. So I love tea so much. I'm not as experienced with Japanese tea, or green tea in general, but I do really like matcha. I make that whenever I need a real caffeine boost, that's what I make.
Fair.
But I'm not a coffee guy.
I'm not a coffee person either. Like it's not like a cup of tea. And we go to Italy for 2 months every year because my husband's from there, so we're with this family. And like espresso and wine is
They
what
love
their
it.
blood is made of. Maybe some olive oil. But no, wow. I mean, this looks amazing. I'm like totally craving all this white tea. But I like matcha. But I will say that I've become a matcha snob just because I was really lucky. I was able to co-found this brand called Shade Matcha, joyshade.com, with a friend of mine who had spent like 2 years doing product research and talking to farmers and making sure that she could find like the highest quality of matcha. Because of her, I learned just like how big that difference is. Like you have the culinary style and then you have like premium style tea.
Like the, and then a lot of it has to do with the marketing too, like how people will call it ceremonial grade just because of the name, but like it's
It's not
not.
actually.
Yeah, I'm actually really curious what you'd think. So there's this tea shop in San Diego called Paru, Paru, like tea bar or tea something like that. They mill their own matcha, like here, and it's amazing. It's the best that I've personally have had. So I'd be curious what your thoughts are, but I can't remember where they source it from. But I've met the lady who owns it, Amy. She's a really nice lady, and They have some really good teas. Mm. My favorite chamomile tea comes from there.
Ah.
But yeah, yeah. They
You want the tea?
Now you know I love tea.
On matcha?
Yeah, I do want the tea on matcha. And what is like the best kind? How do you find it? Sure. I'm still having some trouble with my whisking technique. So
ah, okay.
All of
Aren't
that.
Are you using like an electric frother or like an actual bamboo whisk?
No, like the bamboo
okay, whisk. Oh, cool. Well, obviously the Z patterns is like my favorite routine. But with the matcha, like you have, it comes from Japan. Like most of matcha will come from Japan. That's where all of ours comes from. We work with like an independent farmer and harvesting green tea. So matcha is a green tea. It's like not all Catholics are Christians, but all Christians are Catholic, but all Catholics are Christians kind of thing. So it's like,
yes,
matcha is a type of green tea. It's
the old square circle.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. And like this like baby tea. And so you can harvest matcha 3 times a year. Ceremonial grade and like the premium is that first harvest, which happens around April, May. So you want to get like the freshest of like what's come off the stock.
Yeah.
And so culinary grade, the deterioration of the quality changes with each harvest.
Yeah. And it's like, it has to be shade grown, right? Yeah. Is that just for the first grade or all matcha has
all
to be
matcha.
Grown in the shade?
Yeah. Okay. So like the brand Shade Matcha to like hyper-emphasize.
Right, right.
Because again, it's like, you have a way to look at like quality is to look at the color. Like the greener the matcha, the sooner the harvest and the less sun exposure it has. And like a lot of the Amazon brands are this like yellowy brown. It's like, yeah, that's not ceremonial grade. That also probably has like some additional like add-ins to the tea to like increase the amount of energy and stuff versus just being like organic. Like this is quality.
Pure matcha is vibrant. It looks
fake.
Like, and it looks charged. Like, it looks like a color, like, just bright, like, neon-ish.
Yeah, like, it should look like someone did an AI filter on top of your matcha. And if it looks like, again, anything but vibrant green, you should know that it's either, like, a deterioration of the quality, a later harvest, and a lower grade. Or very likely that they added additional stuff to the matcha because they're like, hey, we want to add additional caffeine boosters and stuff that's like, you know, not the best. And part of like Paige started this journey. Paige was like getting a lot of this matcha from like coffee shops and tea shops. I can't imagine Paru is using anything, but I'm looking at it. It's a very vibrant green. But a lot of like Starbucks and like bigger brands that blend everything else. Think of it as like well whiskey and well tequila versus the higher brand of stuff. And so you're taking in all these extra like unhealthy, like fluff to consume in your body.
Yeah.
And you are what you eat. So.
I mean, Starbucks, they have a large customer base to serve. They do the same with their coffee. Like, I remember I went to Colombia with my family and we went to these like coffee bean farms and they told us kind of the difference of the types of beans that they would use for a company like Starbucks versus, or even a better example is tea bags. So I used to be a really big, I've always liked tea, but not like the way I've liked tea in the past year. But I found out the difference of like, what goes inside a tea bag versus like at the very least loose leaf tea. Like if anyone drinks tea, like at the very least get like the pyramid bags that like they still have loose leaf in them. Cause when it's just the small like little specks of like tea dust, it's like the stuff that comes off the floor of these factories. Like it's like the crumbled up just washings away. Like it's just, I don't know. It's nasty. I can't do that anymore.
I call it sawdust tea.
Yeah.
So.
And the problem is, so like, if you like green tea, so going back to matcha, like, if you like green tea, it's not supposed to taste bitter. But I used to think that it is bitter because number one, I was hitting it with boiling hot water, which is like the first problem with green tea. But then number two would be like, it's so, like, when it is the dust, it just like all, I don't know, it just burns through the tea. Like, it's supposed to be the leaves. You're supposed to do it at like 160, 175. And, just kind of like, take the bag out.
Yeah. Now, I'm really impressed with your tea journey. And I was like, one thing I want to say is there are often a lot of tea experiences on Airbnb, by the way. Like in Kissimmee,
my God,
there's this huge Moroccan tea experience. So it's not always like the same, but like
this is
almost always I see some sort of tea culture happening on Airbnb experiences. So I was like, I really want to tell you that.
This is exciting.
Right. There was something else, but now it's totally escaped me. But I'm sorry. Yeah. Have you ever done any baked tea? Have you ever done like herbal tea where you like you bake it?
I haven't. Okay.
So like there's an gentleman from Vietnam is a Chinese herbs doctor, like by my house. And so I was like having like some like weird lower energy, like I felt like demotivated a while ago, and a friend said, oh hey, just like try some Chinese herbs. I was like, okay, sure. And so I got this, it's like a pot that's like big, and then it like I remember it, like I told him my symptoms, he took all these different things, he had to have his daughter translate because she spoke great. And like also she was like Miss Vietnam Florida or something, like I was like, where did I walk into? It was an amazing experience. And then I was telling him, like, this is what I want. And, like he, like, made this concoction where, like, he opened up, like, 300 different jars of different color brown nature stuff. And then he mixed the bowl and put them into bags. And you could bake three teas out of one bag. But the bag literally looked like if you went to the park and just picked up leaves and put it inside a bag. I was like, what? And, like, then you put it. You put like, you know, like 6 cups of water, you bake the tea to get like this much of a like almost solid brown reddish liquid. That is bitter. But in your like whole tea experience, I'm just curious if you've ever tried baked tea from an.
No, I am very interested in like different. So at the beginning of the show, Lauren, you said when I asked about the dog, you're like, I'm Lauren. That's what I tell people. You strike me as someone who has really cool, unique experiences. To anyone listening out there who wants to have more experiences like that, how do you do it? Besides Airbnb experiences, you gave up one secret.
Yeah. Well, that started from I had this dollar to fun ratio where if it's $5 or less an hour, I will try it. Like the salsa classes are $4.44 an hour. Chinese was $5. Like fencing is $10. But it's more than an hour. It's like an hour and a half.
But you're holding a sword.
Oh. So
dollar to
I'm fun. Stabbing fifth graders because like, and half of my gym, it's like world-class talent, like Olympic hopefuls, world, like people that compete for the Caribbean, for Korea, for Colombia. And then there's like my side. It's like me and a bunch of like little kids and maybe like two or three dads that are doing it with their kids. And we look like we're stage fighting Pirates of the Caribbean as extras. But having a dollar to fun ratio, I would strongly recommend everyone like that, like try it. Another thing that I would do, like if you're encouraging to explore and expand new experiences, tapping into your network. A lot of people have hobbies that they're like secretly passionate about or really into that they don't talk about as much. Yeah. I call this the church effect, right? Like, if you have friends that go to church, there are some that like have it like tattooed across their head. Like I go every Sunday. And then you have others that are like, yeah, I want to include you. Like come join us at church. The way that people have been passionate about inviting you to church, there's also passion for like other stuff. So ask your friend what they do for fun and join them and suspend judgment. Like the best way to suspend judgment is to lead with curiosity. So ask questions. So like, if you know someone that does LARPing and they don't like talk about it a lot, but you're like, hey, is there something that you do that you're really passionate about that maybe I don't know about? Ask them and join. Like you might go to Dungeons and Dragons. They might do board game night. But when you can just piggyback off of what someone else is doing that they're really passionate about, one, you'll get to see a new level of their soul. When I talk about like this like, shining on something.
Yeah.
But then two, like you're going into something not alone where they're like, you've got like a Sherpa with you of fun.
A Sherpa of fun. That sounds good. Mm-hmm. That sounds cool. And I really like what you said about the suspending judgment thing. because that's something I talk about all the time. I've done a lot of writing on active listening and just my experience in listening. My background is I wasn't always a listener. I fucking love talking. That's why I have a podcast. I love hearing myself. And I love meeting new people, talking to strangers. And when I was young, I wanted to be the greatest talker. And then I realized to talk, you have to get really good at listening. And I've had to, like, talking wasn't a skill that I needed training in. I just had that. But listening was something I genuinely had to shape since, like, I remember looking into it since high school. And I've noticed, like, after, you know, I've done a shit ton of cold calls, you know, this is like episode 65 or so on the podcast, like, through all of that, I've found, number one, people feeling comfortable around you is your ability to take out judgment. Like, that's what will get people to open up, is your ability to not judge them in the first place. No one wants to feel judged. And then the way to not judge, I like how you said it's curiosity, because I totally agree. If you are looking for a certain answer so that you could have a reaction about it, that's judgment. But when you're looking for, when you're not even looking for an answer, when you're just curious about the truth, when you're just open-minded as to, like, wherever the chips lie, that's, like, there is no room for judgment when you do that. It just kind of goes away. Because, like, I'll admit I judge myself all the time, but when I'm talking to people, I can, it's like I can put that in a box and place that somewhere else because curiosity takes precedent over it.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, when you're asking questions, you're not thinking of answers. You're not formulating the answers that could be judgmental in nature. And
yeah,
it's funny that you say, like, the active listening, when people are like, oh, what do you wish you could change about the American education system? All about, I'm like, the biggest thing is, like, we don't learn. Like, we have, like, cognitive behavior skills to an extent. You do critical thinking, but we never do critical listening. And I think that should be taught in schools, because the way you communicate, whether it be with your peers, your boss, your parents, your loved ones, the stranger on the train, so often what we say and what is heard do not connect. And I think,
yeah,
it's a skill a lot of us, especially in the US, are needing. So don't feel like you're on your own journey. Hey, there are very few people in life that have, like, mastered that.
Yeah.
And it's like, those have just,
and I'd love to meet them.
They've read How to Win Friends and Influence People like 10 times.
Yeah. That's interesting you say that, especially the thing about, like, I think about that too in education. They do teach us critical thinking, but, like, when do we get taught how to think for ourselves? Like, when do we get taught how to question some of the things we're just told? But, that's a podcast in itself.
For sure. I mean, I remember in, like, so I went to a public high school in the city of Chicago. Shout out to Whitney Young. It's where Michelle Obama and a whole host of, like, really smarty pants athletes, like the Wachowski siblings, went there. It's a really good alma mater. And it's public school. And I remember asking my teachers in my history classes when they started bringing up, like, remember, you're reading one side of history, and how important it was to look at who the author was, what their skin color was, where they were born, where they were educated. To know that that's the lens you're reading this history book from, and that we would have assignments. And I was really grateful for this. Like, my world history teacher had us find another textbook. Like, we had to go find an alternative textbook online from another country to talk about what was happening. Because, like, our version and their version, it was like a US-based, let's say, like, the French Revolution, right?
Yeah.
And we're learning it from the US side. Well, what does the French side say to that same story? Like, I remember that was our one project.
That's brilliant.
And choose any topic.
Yeah.
But then I, like, took that to, like, all my other classes. I was like, great, I want to read both sides of this argument. I was like, I want to know from the math side, what's the calculator answer and what's the manual one?
Yeah, it really made me think, like, growing up, I didn't really care much for math. Have you ever read the book or anything from Richard Feynman? I think you would actually like what is it called? Professor Surely You Must Be Joking. Oh. Surely You Must Be Joking. It's about Richard Feynman, who is a physicist. He was a part of the Los Alamos project with the atomic bomb. He was like 23 when that happened. But he was like a physicist there. Super interesting character. And I think you'd like him because he was an incredibly adventurous, just like follow his own whims, wild person, but also like a Nobel Prize winner who like changed the game of quantum physics or whatever. But what he talked about, and I never cared for math growing up, but I realized like it really is one of the few sources of truth in life. Because with books like history, it's like the person that writes it, they color it with their own perspective. Yeah. And who knows what intention was behind that perspective, whether there was an agenda, whether even if they were missing things because they just only saw one side. But with math, it's like, it is what you can prove. Like 1 + 1 = 2. Yeah. You can't really change that.
I mean, even get creative. I grew up with 5 brothers. There was always, when there's a will, there's a way. Yeah, it's like you were right or you were not. And yeah. What I liked about math was how you got to the answer was less relevant if the answer was right. I mean, it does, of course, yeah. matter, but there are always multiple ways, right? Like even if you're doing like, what is it, the power factor, or if you're doing like x squared plus y squared, instead of like doing yeah. it, you could just do like x plus 1 times x minus 1. I think like, but you could also do it manually. Like, as long as you got to the end result, like the way I describe this with a lot of works is, I don't care about the baby making process. Show me the baby. I don't need to know if you have kinkles or like if you use in vitro or like your 6 month. Show me the baby, like the end solution.
Yeah.
And that's something that I always did love about math. And like going back to the rules of like, it was less complicated. Like you knew, even with geometry, like you knew how things should fit together. And it allowed you to have fun and creativity beyond once you establish these clear foundational principles and rules.
Yeah, and that's what he mentions in the book. One of the things why he was a physicist, but I mean, there like in college, there would be some math people who would come up to him for solving certain problems they couldn't get. And he learned such a weird way to do calculus that like, he knew the textbook style or like the way everybody learns wasn't getting the right answer. So like to him, it was just fun to learn the different weird way. But like then people would come to him because they're like, dude, like whatever you're doing is working. And he was like, I'm not a mathematician, but they all love me.
I mean,
it's such a cool book.
I added it to my Goodreads list, which by the way, like I always say like my Goodreads profile is the way to like really know me because you're like, oh, wow, that's what she spends in 15 minutes?
Yeah.
Yes. But I added it to my Goodreads and it just reminds me of like the TikTok phase of when the algorithm was showing me like how people count with their hands in different ways and do multiplication or like even like, I remember learning like how like people like in the US like 1, 2, 3, I've never liked that because like two, like with baseball, you could separate them. Like I learned sign language. So I changed that or like in Chinese, like you can count up to 10 on one hand. In American sign language, you can count up to 10 on one hand. And like seeing how,
really?
Oh, yeah. So like this is 6, 7, 8, 9, and then 10. Like you can do one hand and same with like sign language. Like this is 15 or like 21. It's a way to say and express the same function. Just like with math. And like if you can find how people do multiplication, like some will do like cross charts or like they'll count with their hands and like do, if you move things over, like, you know, the trick with nines, right? Like, 9 × 6, you put down your 6th finger and it's 54.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. There are so many of those tricks. So I'm like, I'm super into seeing how he discovered calculus that made sense for him.
Oh, his whole book is about tricks. Like this man, he is, don't get me wrong, he's incredibly smart, but he was way more clever than he is smart. Like his ability to trick people, and he was a prankster too. Like during the Los Alamos, like they were doing the atomic bomb, they were bored as shit because it was a top secret project. Everyone had to live in this city. And so he learned how to crack safes. And he learned how, like, he understood the mechanism of the safe, and he found out if you learned like one number out of the whole thing, like you could just kind of bump it open with like the other two, and he didn't have to listen. So he would like crack them really fast for other people who would get locked out. And then he would just like stand in the room waiting. He would tell them they have to leave the room, wait for like 20 minutes. And he's like, I don't want to make them think it was too easy. And then he would like let them in and be like, yeah, I found it. Or so, like random stuff like that. Like he was just, I love his just cleverness. And the best way I can put the word clever, I can't remember where I heard this, but it was like, the intelligent person will tell everyone in the room how to solve a problem. The clever person, when you ask him, will say, go to that guy. He knows.
Oh, okay. I mean, it'll save you time.
And that was kind of him. That was... Yeah. And work.
I mean, like, this made me think, like, would I rather be perceived as clever or intelligent? But of course, with my ego, I want both because I, like, grew up being a compliment thief. I will say, like, that's something very few people know about this me. Know this about me. When I heard someone give a friend or a compliment in proximity to me, it became my mission to steal that compliment and be told it. So, like, I remember at 14.
That sounds so not healthy for so many different ways.
Whatever. It worked out well. Like, I was 14 and my mom was like, Lauren is so bad with money. You can give her a dollar today and she's like $10 in debt by noon. And then this girl, Melissa, my mom was like, I could give her a dollar and she has 95 cents in 3 weeks from now. So I was like, oh, I'm not good with money. But now I have become very more manageable.
Now
with
I'm
my
rich.
Finances.
Take that, Melissa. You bitch.
No, I stopped frivolous spending and I like, yeah. So maybe it's unhealthy, but I was like, oh, I want someone to say that about me. What do I need to do to make that happen? And I did.
All right, Lauren, with that, it's time for the closing questions. Yes, we're going to end it on that trait of yours. All right, time for the closing questions. They're just quick questions to get to know you before wrapping up the show. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. You kind of touched on these, actually, but what kind of music do you listen to?
My go-to is definitely like hip-hop, rap, and Baroque classical music with like sprinklings of Chinese pop, French pop, and Italian rap.
I'm trying to remember what composers go under Baroque?
Think of it like the
That's like with all the harps, yeah. Right? Is that like the harps and the harpsichord piano type stuff?
A lot of piano will go into it. And it's just like,
yeah.
Also the best concentration music. Full disclosure. That's like,
was that Beethoven?
There will be some Beethoven stuff into it for sure. I like music that has like a deeper tone to it. And it's like, think of like 1700s, like 1850s. So it's okay. Not like, you're not going to hear like a lot of like high flute noises or like even like a lot of like woodwinds into it. You're just going to have mellow, tons of Beethoven, tons of Bach. So.
I'm thinking of like really drawn out like cello sounds and things like that. Okay. Yeah, that's cool. What about TV or movies or podcast recommendations?
Okay. TV, my favorite show of all time is a show called Sense8, followed by a show called Orphan Black. Orphan Black was the only time I've ever thought, like, I've watched the show and was like, this person deserves an Emmy. Like, I'm not super into, like, the award shows for Hollywood and stuff.
Yeah.
But holy smokes. Tatiana Maslany, she plays She-Hulk. It's incredible. I can't tell you much about it because the end of season one, there was such a shocking reveal that, like, I was floored. And normally, like, I can predict show endings really, really well.
Yeah.
But yeah, Sense8 and Orphan Black are, like, the two I recommend the most. But I am, oh gosh, I mean, whatever, it's okay. I'll admit this. No shame, right? Suspend your judgment. I am currently.
Suspend judgment.
I'm like a Thai BL drama kick. And if you don't know what that is, you can look it up. I'll let you.
Thai BL. Is that a actor or a
no, the drama. Genre. The genre is BL dramas.
BL. Yeah. Oh, so like from Thailand.
Specifically Thai shows. Like there are BL shows from all over.
Okay. Okay, yeah.
You're smiling. Wait, are you suspending judgment? Or are you leaving with curiosity? I didn't know about this genre. Like, I've known about it, but...
1.5.
Yes. It was like the algorithm has just started showing me, so I watched like 2 or 3, and now I'm up like my 10th show, so that's what I'm currently...
Yeah, I like that you do that. I like that you trust the random suggestions and like just go on a whim with things. I think that is really important for adventure.
I'd never watched a Thai show until like 5 months ago. It's very different experience, and I learned there's this thing called snuffing, where like...
Is that like the really bad?
No, it's instead of kissing, you smell someone. Okay. Like you inhale their pheromones. So like their face or their like neck, or it's a very intimate gesture.
Suspend judgment.
No, like the first, I was like, well, I had to pause. Wait, sorry. Did he just sniff their face? Like, wait, was this a joke? Like sometimes with my friends, like I'll be funny. I'll like lick their face or like bite their arm or something just to be obnoxious. But I was like, no, this was sincere. And then it kept happening and I had to Google and I was like, wow, okay. You know, I never knew.
Learn something new every day.
Nothing.
What kind of books are you reading right now?
So I have a few books. I just finished the Silo series by Howard Howey. It's an Apple TV show as well. Really, really good. I love dystopian books. And then, so I'm a part of 2 book clubs. So one's like a business book club and one's a personal one. So we just read like Mary Jane, which is like a really basic summer read. But books that I really like, it's just it's like favoring to all this like Asian stuff that has become influenced in my life in the last like 4 years, has been a lot of stuff to do with e-commerce expansion into China. So I have found success for e-commerce brands is like to predict the future of e-commerce in the West is just to look 5 years back in the East, because where we are in terms of like e-commerce evolution in America is like predominantly Amazon with everything else catching up to these Chinese apps, to Japanese and South Korean commerce. So I've been just trying to like consume everything I can about the last 20 years in the technology revolution in China and how that specifically disrupted their economy and where they're positioning themselves against the US. So like, I show you, this is my favorite book. And like, I put it there because this is what I'll read every day. The author, she like graduated, she went to Harvard and she speaks in London. So she goes really well in depth about how Chinese culture and Western economics have played into this like sniper role that's coming of how right now the US is such a economic world power, but how long can we like retain that position? And if we don't pay attention to this like not sleeping giant, very vocal giant, this huge economy, what could that mean for us? So.
Yeah, that's a story I keep hearing repeated a lot. And I'm just glad I'm ahead of the curve getting my Wish Trend skincare from South Korea.
No, now you buy the South Korean products from AsianBeautyEssentials.com.
That's correct. That's correct. I got to see how they compare. I got that new coupon code, listener. That's right. You type in PLAYHARD, all caps, one word. Get 20% off. Asian Beauty Essentials. Limited time only. All right, last question is, Lauren, where can people find you?
So my website's Wanderous Media or AsianBeautySocial.com, but on all the socials, it's Lauren E. Petrullo, because I married my husband 10 years ago next month, and someone was born into that name. She's a tall, beautiful blonde with a PhD, and she's like a monkey doctor or something. She's brilliant. She took all the social handles before I did. Lauren E. Petrullo.
Sweet. Well, Lauren, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was such a pleasure meeting you. And I really enjoyed our conversation today. So thanks.
I had fun too. I keep like updating my like Libby and Goodreads app with stuff that I see in your background. I was like, oh, I don't know what that book is. And I was like, oh, half of them I can see on that bookshelf over there. but some of them were like the anti-fragile one. I was like, I don't know what that is, but it really has a good title.
I haven't read it yet, but it's pretty high up on the next. I'm actually starting a book soon, so I might do that. But yeah, it's pretty high up on the list. I hear a lot of good things, and I like a lot of Nassim Taleb's quotes, and like I kind of subscribe to some of the things he says, so I would love to check that book out.
Okay, deal. Well, we'll swap. When you finish, I'm trying to read this one so slowly though. Like it's dense. Like there's a lot of subject matter in here. So I typically speed read a little bit, and this one is like, I feel like I'm watching something at like 1x speed. And
yeah, sometimes if I get over a book, I'll put a pause on it, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes books I'll like be really captivated and just only want to read it. But if I lose that drive and I'm not close to the end, I'll start something that kind of keeps that going. Cause I noticed maybe I like received the lesson I needed at that time, or maybe I like read something that like I want to use and I'll keep using it. But I used to put a lot of pressure on myself to finish books, and it would get me to not read at all. Wow. Because I would get halfway through a book, I wouldn't really
suffer.
It was like painful. So now it's like sometimes what I'll do is like I'll get halfway through a book, and then I'm kind of noticing that feeling. I'll reread something that this book sparked in me. Like I really like going back to books that I really enjoyed. And then it's like the two will work together, and then I go back and then finish the other one.
But it's good. Like you've gotten to the, like, that's one of my favorite things about being an adult. I get to choose what I can buy at the grocery store, and I get to choose what I can start or stop. Like if it's not.
You learn what works for you. Yeah.
Like I don't have to feel required to do anything. But the way you read books is the way I attend conferences. Like if I go to a conference and I hear one nugget of something I can implement, I don't go to any of the other talks. I'll do it. Like I'll go to my room, close the door for 2 hours, come back, and then I'm hanging out networking the rest of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's sweet. All right. Yeah. Thanks, Lauren. Have a great
Enjoy your day. Oh, don't forget to leave a review.